Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, March 15th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me. As we wrap up this week on Bang the Book Radio, I guess I just can't stay away, but you know what? We did a UFC segment with Christian Pena, so I figured I might as well talk some baseball stuff here, especially because I just remembered early in the day that the Major League Baseball season actually starts next Wednesday in Japan, with the Athletics taking on the Mariners. So Major League Baseball season actually starts much earlier than March 28th. So get a good chance here on today's show to talk about the American League West and also the National League East. I'll do that in the second portion of today's show. So we'll start things off with that UFC segment with Christian Pena, which I recorded on Thursday afternoon. So some of these odds may have changed around a little bit. We always like to give you that that disclaimer, but in any event, good thoughts from Christian. Of course, you can check out his preview over at bangthebook.com as well. Speaking of bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff going on over there right now. I did my 30 MLB season win total previews, kind of a general overall preview for the season. Well, now I'm doing 30 team-specific, player-specific previews with some betting tips, angles I'll be looking at, things like that. Posted the American League East on Wednesday. Probably going to post the American League Central here, at least some of the teams, on Thursday, and keep working on those on Friday, as we won't have a show. So it gives me a little bit more time to do some writing over there. But I'll have all six divisions ready to go probably by Tuesday or Wednesday or so. Give you, again, some specific team and player betting thoughts I'm looking at. These are things I'll talk about in my daily picks piece over at bangthebook.com as well. Speaking of daily picks, got those from Kyle Hunter on the college basketball side. Got those from Parker Michaels on the NHL side. Lots of daily NBA and college basketball betting content from our very talented cast of writers over there. And be on the lookout for some good stuff next week for March Madness as well. We've got NASCAR. We've got soccer. We've got tennis from Big Ten Watto. We've got golf. We've got UFC. We cover all the weekly stuff as well over there at bangthebook.com. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. We start things off here with that UFC Fight Night 147 segment with Christian Pena of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Darren Till, Jorge Masvidal, the main event there in that one. We talked about all of the fights that intrigued Christian on that card. So here is that UFC on ESPN Plus 5 segment with Christian Pena of the Sports Gambling Podcast. All right, I'm joined now by Christian Pena of the Sports Gambling Podcast. We're going to chat here about UFC Fight Night 147, or if you want to call it UFC on ESPN Plus number 5. Christian, how's it going today, man?
No better time to be in Vegas, bro. We got baseball coming. We got baseball in 6 days. We have a UFC event every single week. We got March Madness conference tournaments. No place in the world I'd rather be right now.
Speaking of baseball in 6 days, you threw me for a serious loop when we were talking before recording here. I completely forgot about that opening series in Japan between Seattle and Oakland, and that is coming up very, very quickly here. So baseball bettors are going to have to figure some things out here in short order.
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, while all eyes are on March Madness, on conference tournament, on the NCAA tournament, this is kind of my favorite time to go full on, you know, hard press on MLB futures. And I think it's going to maybe mess some people up if they're, you know, people that like to wait, because Oakland's win total is going to come off the board. Seattle's win total is going to come off the board. You're going to see a little bit of movement if you know, maybe most home run prop comes off the board because of Chris Davis there, whether he plays or not. So, you know, not to mention the, you know, division odds are going to, you know, basically be fluid based on what happens within the, you know, that random series. So futures odds for your books may come off the board very, very early that you, you know, may not realize. So definitely would say get on it and get them in now, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I know that we're going to talk UFC here in this segment, but both of us are Major League Baseball guys. I've been doing a ton of work at bangthebook.com. I saw you've been posting some stuff, and make sure you follow Christian on Twitter at Christian Pena, P-I-N-A. Man, there's been a lot of news here lately. You know, we've got plenty of injuries in spring training already. It's been a very busy news cycle over the last couple of weeks in baseball.
It has. And again, you know, it's so funny because I feel like baseball kind of gets this momentum, right? And then it's in a really bad time of year because now NFL free agency comes in and it just ruins any momentum that baseball has had, and people forget about it, except kind of the diehards that I'm not somebody that kind of, you know, obsesses over NFL free agency to be the first person to see a tweet. I mean, you're going to see everything unless it's something that's going to drastically affect odds that I'm trying to get out ahead of, if for whatever reason I was trying to get on board with the Cleveland future, or whatever, then that would, you know, be an issue and something I would be monitoring. But I mean, it's, you're going to see it anyway, unless you're betting markets that, I mean, again, most futures aren't even really out there besides the obvious, you know, Super Bowl one. So baseball gets kind of thrown by the wayside for, you know, many different reasons. That's the biggest one, but so many storylines, so many, you know, prospects coming up. There's, you know, service time issues. CBA needs to get redone to rectify that. And just so many stories. And one of the reasons I love the game so much.
Yeah, I love it too. And, you know, I know you and I have kind of talked offline about the different ways that we attack the baseball betting market and some different considerations that we have. So maybe that'll be something that we do work into these UFC events as we go throughout the summer, because I don't do full shows. I do my MLB podcast twice a week, and we'll be doing these UFC segments. So maybe we'll get some more baseball in there at that point in time. But let's go across the pond over to London here. Again, whether you call it Fight Night 147, UFC on ESPN Plus number 5, or Fight Night Till versus Masvidal, you got a lot of different ways to reference this card. And before we get into the specific matchups, Christian, what do you think about the card overall?
It's going to be entertaining. I think that specifically the main event is a little more, you know, there's a lot more that meets the eye when you look at that betting line. I mean, Gunnar Nelson and Leon Edwards are two guys that, you know, are prolific finishers, which should be very, very entertaining. As you go down, Ozdemir Reyes, that this is kind of a, again, two strikers looking to sit in the middle and bang it out until one person goes down. So the top three fights on the main card are very, very, you know, let's say casual fan friendly. You go down, John Phillips, Jack Marshman is another one that should be two guys trading blows. So all the way down, top to bottom, it's a very casual fan friendly card. What I mean by that is high potential of finishes, high potential of knockouts, and a lot of very live underdogs here. I would say that a lot of these fights, you know, I've always heard matchmaking people within the UFC always, because they're one of the, you know, most forefronting when it comes to gambling, right? They present their odds, and they know that it can grow their sport. And they always said that their goal is to make every fight a minus 110 fight, which is a little bit laughable sometimes because of the obvious showcase fights, but they did a pretty good job here. And there's a lot of very live underdogs in the plus 115, plus 120 to, you know, plus 140 range that if you know, take a contrarian approach here and you know, hope to hit maybe 40%, I think you could do really well here. So a lot of coin flip fights that, you know, maybe I do lean one way, but from a price perspective is dog or pass. So it's a very interesting card, you know, with a polarizing main event.
Well, one of the things that you like to talk about, one of the buzz expressions that you have here on our segments is paths to victory. And when you're talking about the likely to have a finish and not go to the cards, you know, you sort of level the playing field a little bit more in terms of paths to victory. So do you find that, you know, when you expect a finish, you kind of gravitate towards the dog first and then sort of hash out your thought process?
Yeah, exactly. And again, every situation is a little bit different. If I'm expecting a finish from a showcase fight against Francis Ngannou, just because they're both, you know, punchers, you know, again, in theory, the Derek Lewis fight, all that type of stuff kind of goes into that. But yeah, if two guys have the same style, and, you know, one is maybe just a little bit defense, you know, a little bit better defensively, you know, to be shaded to a minus 130. It makes total sense from a long-term perspective to take that underdog. Again, the UFC, I believe, right next to Major League Baseball, baseball at 43%, UFC at 39% for the top two underdog winners, you know, percentage-wise that underdogs come in to win. So long-term, it certainly does make sense. It, you know, if you were going to only play one, I would certainly tell you to play underdogs just because this is a, you know, a fist fight in a cage and anything could happen. But you know, you should look at everything a little bit objectively and not just take one approach like that. But definitely if they're similar, again, a la Cody Garbrandt, who just doesn't use defense anymore, apparently, you know, anyone who has that kind of puncher's chance at this, you know, at the evenly priced line, definitely makes sense to lean towards the underdog pretty much always.
All right. So we start with the main event here on this card, Darren Till, Jorge Masvidal. Till a minus 260 favorite over at DSI Sportsbook right now. As always, shop around for the best prices. And also recording this here around lunchtime, at least Eastern time on Thursday. Should get this out by Thursday night, since we're not doing the full shows here Thursday and Friday with all the basketball stuff. But you had a lot of things to say to me when we started, you know, talking here about this card, about just so many layers to this main event fight.
Yeah, and this is really, this is just your, this line, let me say this first, this line is not right. And I'm not saying to go out there and lay the farm on Jorge Masvidal. Should Darren Till be slightly favored? Yes. You are paying, which I don't think I have ever seen in my life before, you're paying a fighter premium that's not even in this fight this line is this way because this is Ben Askren rearing his head into a UFC event once again, like we talked about. This fight is in London. Another reason this line is stretched out so far is Darren Till returning to his hometown, where he is just as beloved, I would say, as Conor McGregor in Ireland, if you could believe that. That's how big he is over there. So he's going to have hometown fans on his side, hometown judges, and the Ben Askren factor looming. What I mean by Askren is the UFC has flown him over to London to confront him to set up the Darren Till Ben Askren fight. Now, they are really kind of, this is, you know, something that looks to me like, if anyone knows their bets, you know, the WWE market where things are really kind of baked into it, this to me screams that type of scenario. And I'm not saying anything is fixed. I'm just saying you're paying an absolute premium at the top of the market to back a guy like Darren Till. Now, self-admittedly, I have never been a big fan of Darren Till. I have bet against him, against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I may probably, again, biased, but I still think he lost that fight. I bet against him against Tyron Woodley. I think he's raw. I think he's green. And I just don't think of him as a well-rounded mixed martial artist. That being said, the size advantage here for a guy like Darren Till cannot be overlooked. I mean, Masvidal never been finished in 10 plus years. I mean, that is an absolutely incredible streak. This is a 5-round fight. I would hope for a round prop, much like when we were talking about Woodley Usman. If I could get a 3.5 and lay a little bit of juice, I would be absolutely thrilled. And the same thing, you know, maybe even I can get a 4.5 or a fight goes to this or work a prop bet that way. But Masvidal is being a little bit disrespected in this line, but I understand the outside factors to make him this big of a favorite or underdog.
Well, this is one of those too. You know, we've talked about some events. There was one event a couple of weeks ago where they were there for the first time. Last week they were in Wichita. There were some judging questions. We weren't exactly sure what we could expect from the judges if the thing went the distance. Here with Till at home in London, I think there could be some judging shenanigans as well.
I mean, specifically in this main event, again, I think that is really baked into this line a little bit at minus 240 or minus 250 for Darren Till, depending on your shop. I mean, this fight is a lot closer on paper. I mean, I'm talking maybe minus 130, minus 140. So if you're a value guy, I think you definitely should take a shot on the underdog. That being said, he's going to have to overcome, you know, so much here, including potentially judges, including potentially fans, the oohing and aahing, the, you know, incredible reception for Till that's going to inevitably be there. So there's a lot to overcome, especially when you're fighting a guy this beloved. Again, I would really liken it to a version of McGregor, you know, fighting McGregor in Ireland, and imagine how rowdy that would be and judging and, you know, potentially, you know, fight for whatever the existential circumstances you want to make here. Masvidal has to overcome it, and he has to do so at a size disadvantage while trying to kind of, you know, play Till's game against him. Again, Masvidal never been finished in 10 plus years, so Till's going to have to look to use his size, hold him up against the cage, dirty box, and try to bully him around a little bit. But Masvidal always showed size doesn't matter, and he's game for any type of match.
So I guess the question here basically is, I mean, instead of taking the plus 210 with Masvidal, the right play here, because it seems like it's nearly impossible for him to win via decision, would be to just increase your potential profitability and hope that he finds a way to finish Darren Till, right?
I think there's, again, Masvidal has shown that he can adapt to anybody's game plan. I think he could win a decision in theory. It's going to be very hard. Again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, English judges, London judges are not going to allow Till if he loses a very obvious decision. That's probably, you know, it's something that's going to be egregious to the sport. And then again, you know, for whatever reason, you know, judges favor Darren Till's style. Again, a very controversial split decision with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. He got that one. That was, you know, when they were trying to build Darren Till on, you know, on his way to Woodley, because they didn't want Stephen Wonderboy Thompson Woodley 3 or 4, whatever that they're up to now. So it's a little bit crazy that, you know, the storylines and the narrative definitely play into it, but you're paying a premium here for it at minus 240. So again, it's a hard to see a way that Masvidal stylistically can, you know, overcome these odds and everything going on around him in the cage. But again, he's defied expectations time and time again. There could be, you know, again, being the smaller fighter is usually such a disadvantage, but he's shown the ability to do things you just wouldn't expect from a guy that size and should never really be counted out.
I guess the last thing I ask you about with the main event, and then we'll move on to the rest of the card. Is there a price on Masvidal where you say, you know what, I can't pass? You know, if this line keeps increasing, is there a point where you go, I have to take it?
I mean, plus 250, I think, would probably pique my interest. I don't think it gets there, but the public loves Darren Till. We're still a little bit away from London money, actually, in the, you know, that market coming into Barry Darren Till, I would think, as well, much like Notorious Russian money comes in on Nurmagomedov, much like Irish money comes in on McGregor. So I think Till's going to have a little bit of that. If you like this dog, I think you wait till the last possible moment. We've seen this time and time again with the favorite steam coming in, you know, right leading right up to fight time. So if I got +2.25, I don't think, or +2.5, I don't think I would, I'd be able to pass and into bet that I would expect fully to lose, but I just don't think I could pass it up.
Three welterweight fights on this card here, the main event being one of them, and the lead-in to the main event, Leon Edwards and Gunnar Nelson. Edwards a -125 favorite, +105 on the take-back here for Nelson. This looks like a pretty good fight on paper.
Definitely, and we talked about a guy like Zaleski being buried in this division, and Leon Edwards is the same thing, you know, stacked welterweight division. But, you know, somebody that you like, much like Zaleski, that you should know about. I mean, he's coming off a loss to Kamaru Usman, but who isn't coming off a loss to Kamaru Usman at this point? Edwards is, you know, his kryptonite inside the UFC has always been, if you can do one thing, you know, elite, he's going to have an issue with it, because Edwards is a guy that is so above average in every category, but he doesn't have one elite category, whether it be his striking, his wrestling, his ground game, submissions, whatever the case may be. So if you only do one thing, you know, elite, he has an issue trying to game plan to stop that, because he just doesn't have the skills in that particular area. He's more of a spread out, well-rounded mixed martial artist. You know, he lost to Damian Maya's wrestling. He, Sanzinigo Ponzinibbio was post an eye poke, but again, exactly what, you know, Ponzinibbio does in the, you know, kind of that weasel decision type of stuff. So the issue here with Edwards is that Nelson is a submission specialist, and the, you know, that type of thing has posed problems for a guy like Edwards. If somebody does one thing great, that is exactly who he has problems with. And again, not to say that Gunnar Nelson is this elite, you know, Damian Maya, BJJ, you know, Manny Bermudez submission artist. It's just, you look at the guy and you wouldn't think that he's able to do what he does. And it's absolutely incredible that he's able to do that. It could pose, you know, again, this is if Edwards isn't able to, you know, this is to me very simple. It's Gunnar Nelson by submission. When you talk past to victory, Leon Edwards has more of them. He could knock him out. He could win a decision. I have zero. I don't think Gunnar Nelson could win a decision against Leon Edwards. I think it's Nelson's submission along the way or bust. And while Edwards could, in theory, knock him out, submit him, or win a decision. So pass to victory wise, this is why this line, this is one of the ones I was talking about. It's a coin flip. I cannot fault anyone for taking the underdog at +130 if you're going to make that decision throughout this card, because Gunnar Nelson has shown time and time again he can do that. It is the type of fighter that Edwards has struggled with, but Edwards has beaten everyone along the way, and again, just lost to really the best of the best along the way.
Now, what about transplant fighters like Leon Edwards, who was born in Jamaica but, you know, pretty much calls his home now England? Do those guys get sort of that same reception when they fight at home?
Yeah, it really depends on the type of fighter and kind of how they endear themselves, right? You've seen this time and time again. Francis Ngannou, Paris, to, you know, France, to training at the UFC's gym in Las Vegas. So, you know, if he went to Paris, would he get a better reception than Vegas? You know, it just depends on the person. It depends on how much they endear themselves, really, you know, and kind of, you know, depending on where they are, you know, from or where they're coming from and coming to go and kind of what they do to endear themselves to that community, to that fan base, and kind of go from there. Leon Edwards shouldn't have a, again, I don't think a lot of people even know that fact, to be completely honest with you, just because Leon Edwards is, again, such an under the radar type of fighter, unlike Darren Till, who's big, he's brash, you know, does all the right things. He has this, you know, potential upcoming confrontation with Ben Askren to sell with pay-per-views. Edwards isn't really that type of fighter. He goes out there, he gets the job done, and he does so, you know, professionally and classy. So whether you agree with that or you know, disagree and think it probably should be the opposite, I wouldn't expect too much in the way of a huge Leon Edwards reception.
All right, so let's take a look here in the light heavyweight division. This one, Dominic Reyes, Volkan Ozdemir. Reyes, a pretty big favorite here, -260.
Yeah, it really is. And again, this is something where you're expecting a finish. Again, cannot blame you for, you know, taking the underdog shot. This is going to be a theme throughout this card. And it's so funny that, you know, every card that we talk about really seems to have this specific theme, but this is the one of this night. And look, this could be a fight of the night candidate. Both guys willing to stand and trade it. And this is a little bit of a striker versus grappler, but it's a little bit of different when we talk about that, you know, philosophically. Reyes has the grappling advantage for sure, and Ozdemir has the heavier hands. That being said, Reyes is what I would say, you know, Ozdemir is more heavyweight style. He's slow, plodding, uncontrolled, and a little bit, you know, wild out there when he's throwing hands. That being said, if one of those wild and uncontrolled hands lands, Reyes is going to go to sleep. Make no mistake about that. I mean, that's the kind of power that we've seen out of Ozdemir. Reyes is more lateral movement, stick and move, more well-rounded. Ozdemir, again, a little bit less controlled, a little bit more wild than Reyes. A little bit more put together, lateral movement, stick and move, and kind of make him, you know, point fight a little bit, maybe get this fight to the ground, tire Ozdemir out. But again, if Ozdemir lands any of those, you know, any one of those hands along the way, Reyes is going to go to sleep.
Well, and that's another one of those things, too. Again, you talk about paths to victory. And, you know, if you've got a path to victory for a pretty big underdog there against a minus two,
completely agree. And it's like we talked about with Junior Dos Santos versus Derek Lewis. You know, that, you know, Lewis, obviously, again, the cardio issues kind of came in there. But that was something where that, you know, hand is on. There's another fight down here as well, Marshman Phillips, that I think could potentially be like that. But Garbrandt fights, we've seen this time and time again with specifically knockout artists. They're always, as long as their cardio is okay, they're always live no matter what to kind of come back and land that hand, that, you know, right hand or left hand. We've seen it so many times when a fight looks absolutely over and somebody makes a miraculous comeback. And when you have that path to victory and when you're elite in one area, whether it be a Bermudez arm triangle, whether it be, you know, whatever the case may be, a guillotine from, you know, whatever, Gunnar Nelson or whoever the case may be. If one person has that one trick up their sleeve, they're always live no matter what happens. And so it's a big price to lay. I get it. I understand it. He's more well-rounded, should be able to employ his game plan, just has to avoid that, you know, the hands. And that's a lot easier said than done. But again, philosophically, the underdog, you know, path to victory is a very real thing. And he's very live in that spot.
All right, so let's go to that Phillips and Marshman fight that you were mentioning there. Marshman, a minus 160 favorite in that one. What are you seeing from this fight?
Yeah, striker versus striker. This one should not last long. Hoping for a 2.5 under or over under round prop to maybe take a little bit of an under. Maybe a fight doesn't go the distance. These guys both have shown the potential to go to the distance, but this fight is so interesting to me because Marshman and Phillips are basically the two guys that you want to put on auto fade, put your blockers on and just bet against when they're going up against grapplers. A combined 0-4, 0-2 between the two of them when they go up against grapplers, no matter who they are. They have no wrestling defense, and every time that they are put up against grapplers, you're going to look to try to bet against them because they just don't have that part of their game down. That being said, the UFC kind of did both of them a favor here and said, here is your exact replica. Go in there, bang it out, and somebody's going to fall. And that's really what I feel like is going to happen here. Neither guy has great defense. So whoever, you know, is just average at defense is probably the person to not get knocked out here. So again, the same type of theme throughout here. It makes a lot of sense to go Phillips plus 145 when this fight is likely to end via knockout. Marshman, again, I understand why the price is where it is. He's a little bit more polished, a little bit more experienced, been through the ringer, been through absolutely everything. But they should be, you know, standing in there and maybe another fight of the night candidate with some violence involved. So the casual fan, very likely to enjoy this fight. And again, it's the same type of theme throughout here. The underdog makes sense from a price standpoint, but I would lean towards Marshman in a vacuum if you're asking me, just because he's a little bit more polished.
All right, so then I guess I have to ask. I mean, you know, we talked about this on one of our early shows. Is this a spot where you sort of look to free roll the fight and maybe take both guys, you know, by a finish?
Definitely. And again, that's something you can get reverse middled on. So if you do that, instead of, you know, doubling your risk size, again, at a nice payout like that, maybe you do, you know, half your bet size on both and try to work a little arbitrage that way. That being said, I think that that's a little bit built into the lines here. I'm not sure how much value if you're going to be able to get via knockout for a guy like Marshman. Maybe you can do plus money. I haven't looked into it, honestly. Phillips, I would think at plus 145 is still pretty good value. Maybe you get like a plus 165, 175. Again, it's not a huge, you know, that type of prop is usually, again, much like the Gunnar Nelson one, I would assume their most obvious path to victory is usually, you know, built into their prop. It's not kind of a blanket, you know, if you do via knockout, you get, you know, plus 40 points T or better or anything like that. So definitely look into it. If there's any way to turn Marshman into plus money via that way, or Marshman inside the distance, or Marshman just via knockout, definitely makes some sense to maybe split your bet up a little bit and do both like that, like just like you said.
All right, so we head down to the preliminary card here. We'll take a look at the things that you like on the prelims. All of this card on ESPN Plus, though. Anything on the prelim card that you know, you're kind of interested in?
Yeah, when we look at this Diakhaeci fight versus Joe Duffy, I mean, Joe Duffy minus 220, Mark Diakhaeci plus 180. People forget, I mean, Joe Duffy, Irish Joe Duffy holds a win over Conor McGregor. I think a lot of people really forget that and kind of what he's been through within the UFC. Casey, I mean, plus 180. I understand it. Look, he was one of the hottest prospects in the business. Appears that he's really kind of, you know, clear and past that in not a great way. Three-fight losing streak coming into this. Explosive, unpredictable guy, but the technical aspect of his game, the fundamentals of it, just never really developed. He was a guy that fell in love with the finish, the flashy knockout. And when that wasn't available to him, to guys that had, you know, a much better set of fundamentals and technical know-how, he faltered when he wasn't able to, again, get that knockout, get that flashy variance type of win. Again, same thing here. Duffy's the more well-rounded guy across the board, and he just has to be able to, you know, again, this is a very similar situation. Diakasey, in my mind, has one way to win, and that's the flashy knockout. You're never going to see it coming. He has a little bit of Uriah Hall in him, a little Lando Venata. You're going to see, you know, he'll be losing a 30-26 and has the potential for a spinning back kick off the cage with a DDT at the end. I mean, he's that type of explosive guy in theory. But Duffy is just has the fundamentals down to a point that Diakasey just does not. And I don't see that happening. That being said, again, the same narrative throughout here. If Diakasey lands one throughout this fight, you're going to be, you know, upset as a Duffy backer. But I just don't see kind of, if there was one out there that I think would play out very simple, this is Duffy with a much better fight IQ. Play this one safe, dirty box, up against the cage, stick and move, and try to, you know, work his fight that way. A Joe Duffy decision, very likely here to get to the scorecards. And I just, Diakasey, I just don't think is ever going to regain, you know, kind of what he had. He set the world on fire, but that's what you have to look at when you're looking at prospects coming up via these amazing finishes. It looks great. It's awesome, but you have to look and see, can they win a decision? Because that knockout is not always going to be there, and especially against guys as kind of experienced and well-rounded like a Joe Duffy. So that price certainly makes some sense. But again, if you're looking for an underdog with at least a knockout chance, Diakasey certainly has it at plus 180.
Christian Pina, who's work you can find on the Sports Gambling Podcast, and also go read his preview over at bangthebook.com here for this fight, at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A, on Twitter. Christian, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy. Sounds good. Take it easy.
Great breakdown there from Christian. Again, make sure you check out his preview over at bangthebook.com as well. And, you know, we'll be doing this every week here with him, even as we go throughout the summer months when I'm just doing the Bettors Box segment. We'll hop on Fridays, or, well, we'll probably record on Thursdays, but get on Talk UFC and I'll record that segment and get that put out for you as we go throughout the summer here. Probably do some one-off segments with Brian Blessing and maybe some of the other guests for golf tournaments, horse racing, you know, college football win totals, NFL stuff, things of that sort. I will make sure to get you some stuff here over the summer. All right, so we talked a lot of college basketball here this week on Bang the Book Radio. We talked about conference tournaments. Next week, we'll cram a lot of March Madness stuff into Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday here on the show. And you know, we talk all the time about futures betting, looking for value, trying to find those good opportunities that are out there in the betting markets. And PropSwap is one of those good ideas. Here's how PropSwap works. Let's say you lay a $100 futures bet on Michigan to win the NCAA championship. They win a couple of games, maybe three games, and you don't like the draw going forward. You're a little bit concerned about that. So you decide, you know what? I want to guarantee myself some profit. I want to get some equity out of this ticket. Whether you've held that bet for 2 months or 2 weeks, PropSwap still gives you the opportunity to list that ticket and get paid early. It's just that simple. You know, last year you had people buy cheap Loyola Chicago tickets and turn those into good money, a $10 ticket into $1,000, a Warriors futures ticket in the NBA at 2-1 odds. Just lots of great opportunities for you on PropSwap to find good prices and also to get some equity out of those tickets that you're selling at very good odds. So go to PropSwap.com/BTB to get started. Again, PropSwap.com/BTB. It's not just basketball over there. They've got football. They've got hockey. They've got college hockey. They have a lot of stuff over there. As long as there's a physical ticket or an app ticket, if you're a three-star seller, you can post that over on PropSwap. So lots of good opportunities for you over there. It's legal to buy these tickets in 12 different states. Head to PropSwap.com/BTB for more details. All right, we transition over to the Major League Baseball side of things here now. I'm going to talk about 10 teams on today's show as I break down the American League West and the National League East. give you some betting thoughts. And also what I'm going to do here, I'm going to send out my notes to everybody on the Bettors Box mailing list. I know I had some people that sent me an email that wanted to sign up for it. I still have some holdover emails from last year. So I'm going to add the new ones to that mailing list. I'll send off these notes from this March 15th segment here. If you don't want to be on the mailing list anymore, just shoot me an email. Tell me that you want me to take you off the mailing list. I will definitely do that. No hard feelings. If you are somebody who's not on that mailing list, shoot me an email, adam@bangthebook.com. I'm not sure if I'll do this for all the MLB segments that I do here in the month of March, but I will do it with every edition of the Bettors Box. So I cover a lot of things. I cover a lot of numbers, a lot of statistics. Probably in your best interest to sign up for the notes mailing list here for the Bettors Box and the MLB segment. So adam@bangthebook.com if that's something that you want to do. All right, let's talk American League West here. We start with the Houston Astros. Last year, 103-59 for the Astros. Bounced, of course, in five games by the Boston Red Sox in the American League Championship Series. Season win total here for the Astros, 96.5. Last year's team tied for the best Pythagorean win-loss record since 1960. That was a much better team than the 103-59 record would indicate. They were actually a much better team than the 103-59 record would indicate. They were a 109-53 team last year based on Pythagorean win-loss, which is a standings metric derived from run differential. So they were even better last year than their record would suggest. But this year, I've got some concerns, and starting pitching depth is becoming a real weakness here. They are very top-heavy with Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. Both guys had career years last year, particularly in the strikeout department. Cole seems more sustainable because Justin Verlander in his mid-30s now. This is a very top-heavy rotation, though, because behind Verlander and Cole, you've got Wade Miley, Colin McHugh, and Brad Peacock. Lance McCullers out for the year with Tommy John. Josh James delayed with a quad strain here in spring training. Forrest Whitley just not ready to go yet. And he's a guy that was limited to about 70 innings last year in the minor leagues. So I think there's a spot for Houston here if they want to be the team that gets Dallas Keuchel. But the problem is they probably only want Keuchel for 1 year. He'd like some multi-year security. You can't fault him for that. So maybe Houston has to bite the bullet and either give Keuchel a couple of years, maybe 2 or 3 years, or go with these depth options that they have. You know, McHugh was a starter, wasn't very good in that role, went to the bullpen, was very, very good. Now he transitions back to a starting capacity. Brad Peacock, same thing, was a starter, then a reliever, now back to starting. So these are guys that have a track record. These are guys that you don't really have to worry about from a workload standpoint. But from a consistency standpoint, I'm not sure what to expect from them. You know, I'm not sure if Wade Miley is the real deal with that contact management he developed in Milwaukee. I don't know how McHugh and Peacock, who have very good secondary offerings, I don't know how they do, with having to deepen their arsenals by being in the starting rotation. Lots of question marks here for this starting rotation. In fact, could create some depth issues for this bullpen as well, to the point where, you know, a lot of bullpen innings mounting for these guys as we go throughout the season. The thing for Houston, though, is that there are no weaknesses in this lineup. This lineup is exceptionally good. Carlos Correa was hurt most of last year with a back problem. He should be good to go this year. Alex Bregman was a little bit late to the party in spring training with an elbow problem, but he's a guy that I think is not a dark horse, but a guy I like to win the MVP this year. Jose Altuve, very good. They add Michael Brantley. Great lineup. Tremendous lineup. They'll out-hit some of their pitching concerns, and they'll still win the West Division here. But again, you talk about players to watch. I mean, you've got several guys here in this starting rotation that you want to take a very close look at. We move on to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, 80-82 last year. Season win total here this year, 83.5. Unfortunately, some bad news here this week coming out of Angels camp that Andrew Heaney is already hurt. I presume Tyler Skaggs will be soon to follow. Heaney was a guy that really ramped up the workload last year relative to the previous 3 years. Disappointed to hear that he's already dealing with some discomfort. You know, Matt Harvey, obviously a long injury history for him. Trevor Cahill is a guy that, you know, he's not all that durable either. So rotation depth, a substantial issue for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim for this season. And also, I don't like the bullpen at all. You know, they're hoping Cody Allen can return to form. I'm not so sure about that. He's the only guy with closer experience really in the back end of this bullpen. You know, you've got Justin Anderson and Cam Bedrosian, some guys that have, you know, had cameo appearances in that role, but Allen has to be good for this bullpen. I don't really know if he's going to be. I do like the offense. You know, obviously you've got Mike Trout. You have to like an offense with Mike Trout. Justin Upton, Angelton Simmons, Justin Bour, Zach Cozart should be better coming back off the injury. They've got some offensive pieces, but man, I don't like this pitching staff at all, top to bottom. Just not a fan. I don't like the Brad Ausmus hire. There have been some articles here about Ausmus embracing analytics a little bit more, working alongside Billy Epler. That's fine. Show it to me before I actually believe it. Don't love that hire. Hate this pitching staff. And Jaime Barria, who's going to get one of these rotation spots here, 3.41 ERA last year, 4.58 FIP, 4.99 XFIP, 82.1% left on base percentage, horrible K rate, below average walk rate. Did induce some weak contact, so there is that, and credit to him for that. And it's a very good ballpark to be a fly ball pitcher, but I don't love this profile. Regression will be coming. And also looking at another guy here in this rotation, Matt Harvey, 12th highest fly ball and line drive average exit velocity last year. So he gave up a lot of hard contact. The Angels better score a ton of runs, but I'm looking at the Angels as an under team, under 83.5. I think they'll struggle to get to 500 again and waste yet another year of the prime of Mike Trout. The Oakland Athletics, 97-65 last year. Season win total this year, 83.5. This team is not getting nearly enough respect. I love this Oakland team. This is a season win total that I played, one of my biggest plays here of the season win total cycle here. I love this team. They've got a good offense. They still have an elite bullpen, despite some of the losses that they had. And, you know, in fact, they pick up Joaquin Soria. You know, they spent some of their resources on him. He led the league last year among batters with 150 batted balls in average exit velocity against. So he's a perfect perfect complementary piece to Blake Treinen. They still have Lou Trevino. They still have a lot of guys that are very, very solid relievers in that Oakland bullpen. Look, the rotation's not great. You know, I get it. Mike Fiers, Marco Estrada, Brett Anderson, Frankie Montas, Chris Bassett. Small margins for error. Not a whole lot to get excited about here. But look in the minor leagues. Jesus Luzardo is going to be coming very soon. He looks like the real deal, one of the top prospects in this Oakland organization. James Kaprielian comes back from Tommy John this year. He should get that stock rising. AJ Puck is the number two prospect in this system. Grant Holmes looks really good. You know, by July or August, this Oakland rotation could look dramatically different. Dramatically different. I love this team. I really, truly do. They've got great depth organizationally. Franklin Barreto, Jorge Mateo, Dustin Fowler. They've got guys in the minor leagues as well that can step up in the event of injuries. Matt Chapman's the best third base defender in the American League. Matt Olson's a good hitter. Chris Davis, big power threat. Steven Piscotty. They've got a solid outfield. I love this Oakland team. Over 83.5. Probably my favorite season win total play here for the upcoming season. You know, they hit for power. They've got that depth. And also, too, you know, I don't think that this rotation will be as bad as people think. And I look at one key guy here in particular, and that's Marco Estrada. Marco Estrada last year, 5.64 ERA, 5.44 FIP, 5.79 XFIP, 24% ground ball percentage last season. Well, where was Marco Estrada last year? He was in Toronto. Top five parks in WOBA, weighted on base average, on fly balls and line drives last season. Toronto was third. Yankee Stadium was second. Fenway was fifth. Of the 28 starts that Estrada had last season, 17 of them in those three parks. He had 14 starts at home where he was very bad with a 5.43 ERA and a 5.70 slugging percentage against. In two starts at Yankee Stadium, Estrada allowed 13 runs on 13 hits. And over, I think, 7 1/3 innings. And then 4 runs on 7 hits in his lone Fenway start. So was he good last year? No, not at all. But he was really bad in parks that are really bad for fly ball and line drive pitchers. Estrada does not induce ground balls. So I think there's some hidden surplus value here this season in Marco Estrada. Because Oakland's ballpark last year, Oakland Coliseum, was 20th in weighted on base average on fly balls and line drives. Texas was fourth, so he'll be a fade candidate when they go down to Arlington. But Angel Stadium was 15th. Minute Maid Park in Houston was 19th. Safeco Field was 22nd. So massive park factor upgrades here for Marco Estrada. I think a 4.25-ish ERA, not out of the question at all. And with this bullpen and with this offense, that's going to play for Marco Estrada. So Marco Estrada is a guy, I'm not saying you draft him in fantasy leagues. I'm not saying you get all excited about him. But when he's in a home dog role or a toss-up type of role this year, I will be looking to back him both at home and on the road because I think he will be a very undervalued commodity. Again, last year, top five parks in fly ball and line drive weighted on base average. His home park was third. Yankee Stadium was second, and he was terrible there. And then Fenway was fifth, and he was bad in his one start there. Now much better park factors for Estrada. You know, and really, you know, even a guy like Mike Fiers, same kind of thing. Even a guy like Chris Bassett, same kind of thing. You know, a lot of pitch-to-contact guys in this Oakland rotation, but they're a much better team defensively than they've been in the past. And also this park factor does kind of elevate those guys with that cool marine air and all of the foul territory at Oakland Coliseum. The Seattle Mariners here, 89-73 last year, but they were the biggest overachiever in baseball per Pythagorean win-loss, and then they went on to have a fire sale. Their season win total here, 71.5. The guys that are gone, Robinson Cano, Edwin Diaz, James Paxton, Gene Segura, Nelson Cruz. You know, when I looked at this from last season, Edwin Diaz and James Paxton combined for 25% of the Mariners' total team strikeouts. So they lost a lot in losing those two guys. But that being said, season win total down to 71.5. I still like Mitch Haniger. I still like Domingo Santana. It's a bummer that Kyle Seager is going to be out for the next 6 weeks, which will take him essentially into the month of May when it comes to his return. But, you know, still some professional hitters, guys like Jay Bruce, Edwin Encarnacion. Yeah, they're on the downsides of their career. But I don't think this lineup's going to be nearly as bad as people think. I like a guy like Malik Smith as well. So I don't think this lineup's going to be that bad. Now, I don't love the pitching staff. Marco Gonzalez, your opening day starter. That's cool. He's not bad. Four average or better pitches. Couple of bad months last year. He's pretty good otherwise. You know, pitch to contact kind of guy, but, you know, doesn't walk guys. And he's left-handed. And that always helps a little bit, especially when you're in a very good park factor like Gonzalez is. A lot of people, of course, going to be looking at Yusei Kikuchi. Deception. High swing and miss rates in Japan. I think he's a guy that could play above average here, especially at Safeco Field. So Gonzalez and Kikuchi, I think, are just fine at the top of this rotation. It's kind of everybody else that I'm a little bit worried about. We know King Felix is nothing anymore. Wade LeBlanc, not great. And Mike Leake, the guy I want to settle on here, or guy I want to focus on here. You know, for Mike Leake last year, very high exit velocities against early in the season. And I talked about this in my picks and tips piece, and we had a nice little run backing Mike Leake in the middle of the year. He did not pitch well late in the season, though. This is a guy that needs to change his arsenal quite a bit. You know, he did throw his sinker 9% less last year, needs to throw the slider and the cutter a lot more. If those changes take hold, maybe he's the guy we want to look to back. 4.36 ERA last year, 4.14 FIP, 4.15 XFIP. Average FIP and XFIP, he's not a great pitcher by any means, but he shouldn't hurt this team too much. Quite frankly, I don't mind going against the grain here with Seattle over 71.5. I don't love it by any means, but I think that there's a big overreaction to what this team lost. And not enough people are looking at what is still here. I think this team, despite a pretty weak bullpen, I think they'll be very competitive this season. Maybe they fall around 70 wins. Maybe this is a pretty good number. I'm not going to bet it personally. But if I had to take every team, I would look to take Seattle over. I just think that there's a little bit of an overreaction to everything that the Mariners have done here this offseason. One more team to talk about in the American League West is the Texas Rangers. I won't spend too much time on them. Season win total 67-95, or last year's record, 67-95, season win total 70.5. Look, this is a bad team. You know, you've got so many questions in this starting rotation. Does Mike Minor hold up for a second straight year as a starter? Lance Lynn in Arlington with command and control issues. That's terrifying. Edinson Volquez, Drew Smyly, Shelby Miller, all coming off of major injuries. Volquez off Tommy John, Smyly off of everything under the sun, Tommy John for Miller as well. You really got to wonder what those three guys are going to do. And really what the Rangers have done here is they've positioned themselves to trade those guys to contenders at the trade deadline. And you can't really fault them for that. I think it's a decent way to try and restock your farm system a little bit. But also, these guys are very high risk with marginal rewards. So I'd be very worried about this Texas starting rotation. In fact, I am very worried about this Texas starting rotation. I will say, at least there's this, that Jose Leclerc, probably the best reliever you've never heard of, the closer for Texas, very, very good, at least if they have leads in the late innings. They should be able to hold those up with Leclerc and a guy like Jesse Chavez, and also a nice little pickup at Sean Kelly. Now, offensively for the Rangers, you know, they're going to work with Nomar Mazara on his launch angle. We'll see if that pays any dividends. We know Joey Gallo hits dingers, but a lot of them are going to be solo here. I think Asdrubal Cabrera is the second best hitter in this lineup. He'll be traded in the month of July, quite possibly to Cleveland. And then Shin-Soo Choo, off of his first good year in the last three, he's heading into his age 37 season. You really worry a lot about this Texas team, both pitching-wise and offensively. This is an under to me. This is one I've considered betting. I haven't pulled the trigger on it yet, but definitely looking at Texas under their season win total of 70.5. All right, we move on to the National League East here, where we start with the Atlanta Braves, last year's division champs in the NL East at 90-72. Their season win total 86.5 here. This is a clear-cut under pick for me. This is one I have played already. This is one I do like quite a bit. Look, they're the fourth best team in this division. They've got a good offense. They've got Ronald Acuna. They've got Freddie Freeman. Ozzie Albies. We'll see what Josh Donaldson does if he's healthy. Nick Markakis, Ender Inciarte, Johan Camargo. They've got guys that can hit. And the problem for Atlanta is that, except for Miami, everybody else in the division can hit too. The difference is they have pitching, and Atlanta does not. You know, Mike Foltynewicz is already hurt. Plus, he was a regression guy anyway with a 2.85 ERA, 3.37 FIP, 3.77 XFIP. Big drop in BABIP, had a big strikeout spike. Usually you see the opposite. You'll see the strikeout spike, the BABIP go up. Adjusted arsenal, threw more sliders, fewer fastballs. That's good, but, you know, didn't get the same chase rate with more sliders. Got some swings and misses in the zone that I don't know if they're going to stick. Foltynewicz, though, actually is, quite frankly, outside of the injury, the least of my worries here. Sean Newcomb, 11.6% walk rate. Julio Teheran, 11.6% walk rate. Last year for Teheran, a BABIP of 217. That was way off of his career mark. 3.94 ERA, 4.83 FIP. He's a regression guy. They lost Anibal Sanchez. Tuki Toussaint's going to slot in the rotation. And, you know, he could be good, but I think right now he has more of a bullpen profile as he develops all of his pitches in that arsenal. I hate this rotation. I really, truly do. I think there's some upside in the minor leagues. There's good AAA depth. Those guys will be up sooner rather than later, probably. But, man, even with Kevin Gausman, who I think can be a little bit above average, you know, I don't like the rotation. I think the bullpen is very pedestrian. Unless they go inside Craig Kimbrell, that would be a big help. I don't love this team. I like the offense. I don't like the pitching staff. And like I said, the teams in this division that can hit also have pitching. That puts them ahead of Atlanta in a lot of different ways. The Central's very strong. The West isn't really a complete pushover. So Atlanta under for me, under 86.5, definitely one that's on my radar. As I said, I played it already, but, you know, we'll see. If this thing goes back up again, I may double down a little bit on it. How about the Miami Marlins here? 63-98 last year. Their season went total 63.5. Already played the under on this one. I mean, this team is worse than last year, and the division is much, much stronger than last year. I don't know how this team avoids 100 losses. I really, truly don't. They're going to lose 50-plus games. They're probably going to lose 55 games in this division at least, playing 76 against these four teams. 55 losses already. Not asking for a whole lot to get, you know, the rest of the way to the under here on this one. Ryan Anderson is good. Starlin Castro is good. There's very little beyond that in terms of the starting lineup. They'll have a massive fire sale this summer with Carlos Granderson, Martin Prado, Wei-Yin Chen, if somebody wants him. Starlin Castro's got a year and a half left. He could be on the move. They've got some other rental guys as well. They're looking to cut payroll wherever they can. The Marlins are going to look much different after the trade deadline here this year, and it won't be a good look at all. And furthermore, something else to keep in mind, one of the rule changes, there's one trade deadline now. There's one trade deadline, and it's July 31st. Well, the fact that teams can't trade these waiver guys in August means that they're looking at 2 months of being rid of everybody. You know, last year teams would decide, you know, once they got into late August, well, I don't think we're going to do it this year. let's make some waiver trades. Well, teams don't have that luxury now. Not that the Marlins are going to be in the hunt at all anyway, but maybe they would have made some waiver deals because guys get put on waivers just in case they get claimed. Then the teams try to work out a deal. If they can't, the player stays with the team. If they can, there's a waiver deal. There's no waiver trade deadline anymore at the end of August. So now these teams that are looking to be sellers absolutely have to get rid of these guys by July 31st. So like a Texas, like a Miami here, these teams that won't be in the hunt, they're going to go 2 months without some of those guys that they've traded away, as opposed to maybe 6 weeks or 4 weeks. So that's definitely a consideration here as well with some of these bottom feeder teams. For Miami, you know, people are raving about Pablo Lopez, a velocity increase for him, solid minor league numbers. He's a contact management guy. I think he could be okay. You know, I like Caleb Smith and Trevor Richards. Both of those guys missed some bats. Both of those guys also missed some time last year with injuries. Wei-Yin Chen, Dan Straley, serviceable at home, but complete punching bags on the road. I would not be shocked if the Marlins only win 25 road games this year. I really, truly wouldn't be shocked because they've got a starting staff that really has potential to get beaten up badly on the road, and they can't hit. You know, at least at home, the fact that they can't hit, it's not as bad because they can pitch better at Marlins Park, but they can't hit. And if they can't hit on the road, they're not winning much of anything. How about these splits for Wei-Yin Chen? At home, in 78 innings, Wei-Yin Chen, a 162 ERA. Again, 78 innings. 180 batting average against, 245 on base, 283 slugging against, 230 WOBA against. Again, at home in 78 innings. In 55 and a third innings on the road, Wei-Yin Chen last year, a 927 ERA, 332 average against, 398 on base, 609 slugging percentage, a 419 WOBA against on the road. 419. I mean, that is incredible how bad Wei-Yin Chen was on the road last season. I would not expect it to be a whole hell of a lot different here this year. To give you a frame of reference here, last year, Christian Yelich, who won the MVP, had a 422 WOBA. So essentially, everybody on the road against Wei-Yin Chen hit like Christian Yelich, which is insanity. But that's just how bad Wei-Yin Chen was on the road last year, getting his 55 and a third inning. So obviously, Wei-Yin Chen may have some value at home. On the road, not at all. We'll play overs. We'll play first five overs. We'll play that type of stuff against Wei-Yin Chen when he's on the road. Let's take a look at the New York Mets here. 77 and 85 last year. 85 and a half their season win total. Look, this is an elite rotation. Jacob DeGrom, Noah Syndergaard, Zach Wheeler, Jason Vargas even had some decent exit velocity numbers against. Steven Matz, the riddle for Mickey Callaway to solve here this year. You know, look, the Mets add Robinson Cano, Wilson Ramos, JD Davis, Dominic Smith, and Pete Alonso are going to play at first now. They've got a more athletic bench with Jonathan Broxton, Juan Lagares, Adani Hecheverria. You know, Jed Lowry's injured right now, but he'll be back. Todd Frazier's still okay. If Yoenis Cespedes comes back at all, that's a big boost. Brandon Nimmo had a great year last year. Michael Conforto closed out the year strong. I like this lineup quite a bit. I like their balance. I like their versatility. If Jeff McNeil plays in left field, it's going to be ugly. But, you know, really outside of that, I mean, the Mets are a decent defensive team, I guess, overall, but a very solid offensive team. Problem is they play in a park that really suppresses offense. We'll have to see how that goes for them over the course of the year here. But, man, outside of the rotation, which is very strong, the bullpen is quality. You've got Edwin Diaz, Juris Familia. I love Robert Gsellman and Seth Lugo, two right-handers that I really like. Very high spin rate for Lugo's curveball. The only thing I worry about is that this team is a little bit older. But, you know, really, I think the Mets have a lot of potential here this year. One guy I do want you to take a look at here, Jason Vargas. 577 ERA last year, 502 FIP, not good at all. 442 XFIP, though. So that home run to fly ball percentage should regress. 285 WOBA against at home, 394 WOBA against on the road. But over his last 54 and a third innings, held opposing hitters to a 288 WOBA and had some decent road efforts in Philadelphia, in Chicago against the Cubs, in Washington. So he was a guy that, you know, was hurt early on in the season, but got better as the season went along. Again, had some decent exit velocity metrics. Jason Vargas is going to be a hidden gem, I think, at home in his starts this year for the Mets because DeGrom, Syndergaard, Wheeler, they're all going to be priced high. No one's going to bat an eye at Jason Vargas. And I think there could be some upside and some value there with him. Philadelphia Phillies, 80-82 last year. Season win total here this year, 89.5. Look, Bryce Harper's a big deal, but this was a strong lineup anyway. One thing that the Phillies were missing last year, I'm not a big batting average guy by any means. I'm definitely an on-base percentage type of guy and then a WOBA type of guy. But they were missing batting average at the top of the order. Now they get Andrew McCutchen. They get Gene Segura. They added that batting average element, and they didn't sacrifice walk rate. You know, they still have Rhys Hoskins, who's going to walk a fair amount. Cesar Hernandez is a good on-base percentage guy. Mikel Franco was back to league average. You know, this is a lineup that looks really, really strong overall. And you're going to have depth 1 through 8 in this lineup, guys that get on base, guys that put the ball in play, guys that hit for power. I like this lineup quite a bit here for the Phillies. Now, the pitching staff has some surplus value guys. Obviously, there's Aaron Nola, and you wonder about his innings increase going up to 212.1 innings last year. But Jake Arrieta was hurt last season. I would expect him to be more consistent. Nick Pivetta, 4.77 ERA, but a 3.80 FIP, 3.42 xFIP, well over a strikeout per inning. Cut his home run rate down by about 2.5% from 2017 to 2018. If he does that again this year, he's close to league average. So I would expect Pivetta to be closer to a 4 ERA with those good peripherals. Vince Velasquez, 4.85 ERA, 3.75 FIP. One thing that did really hurt these guys last year is that the Phillies were terrible defensively. They'll be better defensively this year. They won't be great by any means, but they will definitely be better. That'll help out this staff. The season win total just has no equity at this point with the Harper signing going up into the high 80s. But this will be a very good team, will be a playoff caliber team, should be right there for this division when all is said and done. Finally, we take a look at the Washington Nationals here. 82-80 last year, 88.5, their season win total. They added Patrick Corbin to go with Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg. Hopefully Strasburg stays healthy this year. They also added Anibal Sanchez. And Anibal Sanchez really changed his arsenal around last season. Wound up with the second best average exit velocity against in baseball behind Joaquin Soria. And I'll talk a lot about exit velocity as the season goes along, but I mean, think about it. You know, if you're able to avoid hard contact, guys don't hit home runs with 88 mile per hour average exit velocities. You know, they just don't do it. So the most detrimental of hits, the extra base hits, usually balls that get hit really, really hard. If you can minimize hard contact, you can have a lot of success. Sanchez, a guy that did that last year. I know people will look to fade him with his lower ERA and his higher xFIP, but I believe in the sustainability there of Anibal Sanchez, also going to a Nationals team that plays some pretty strong defense, which should help him as well. And look, you add Corbin, you add Sanchez, bring back Hellickson. You know, you lost 30 bad starts from quad A pitchers last year. Also, I think you upgraded from Tanner Roark with Anibal Sanchez. I really like this Washington team quite a bit in the pitching department, at least from the starting pitching side. I like the lineup too. You know, even without Bryce Harper, lots of high velocity contact guys, Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, who's the most underappreciated player in baseball, Adam Eaton, Trey Turner, guys that can run, guys that put the ball in play, guys that get on base. I like Brian Dozier as a bounce back candidate. I like this lineup quite a bit too. Now the bullpen is my primary worry for Washington. High risk, high reward. Sean Doolittle gets hurt a lot, but misses a lot of bats. Trevor Rosenthal missed all of last year. Kyle Barraclough misses a lot of bats. You know, the thing is, like the Indians, the Washington rotation will work deep into games. So that can help the bullpen out a little bit. But if injuries pop up for this bullpen, major concerns there for them. And obviously, you know, Davey Martinez, people not too sold on him. So I do like Washington from a talent standpoint to win the East. I think there's a little bit of value on them. I like their season win total over a little bit. Again, high number. When you talk about high numbers, not a lot of margin for error. But, man, this NL East, very, very strong. But, again, I think the Braves, the team I would expect to take a pretty decent step back here this year, and obviously the Marlins, will be a punching bag. And, again, Oakland over in the American League West, my favorite season win total over bet here of the season. So, there you go. There's a look at the American League West and the National League East. Going to have to do some more baseball stuff here as the season getting very, very close. Again, make sure you head over to bangthebook.com. Check out all of my baseball content. Very two landing pages, the MLB season win total primer, and the season betting tips. Bookmark those. Check those out as you can. Also, the Kindle ebook available, and we'll get that PDF posted over at bangthebook.com as well. So lots of baseball stuff going on, lots of college basketball stuff going on. Very busy time of year. Keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. Again, no shows Thursday, Friday of next week. Well, no full shows anyway. I'll do some baseball stuff or something like that. And, of course, we'll do the UFC segment with Christian Pina. But as far as Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday go, Monday we'll do the Monday mailbag again. We'll start off the show with that. We'll talk with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Tuesday, Brian Blessing, Rolf Michaels, Tony George, Brad Powers. Wednesday, we'll talk with Kyle Hunter again. We'll cover all of the March Madness regionals. We'll talk about some betting tips in the other postseason tournaments as well. Have a lot of good stuff coming for you next week on those three shows. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.